Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. As you know, lots of new ministers are giving briefings lately. You know, they're just discussing preliminary plans, what they think needs to be prioritized. So the new Correctional Services Minister, Pieter Groenewald, says that there needs to be a review on the parole system, and that should be by the end of the year. We decided to get an expert to tell us what exactly needs to be reviewed. Ian Ellis, a criminal law expert, on the line with us. Thank you very much for your time. Good evening, Mr. Ellis.
Good evening, Pamela. Good evening to the listeners.
In your view, what about the parole system needs to be reviewed?
Well, I don't think we have that much time on air to go ahead and go through all the things that are wrong with our parole system.
High level.
But let's just summarize. They need to go ahead and review both the criteria as well as the board, and what is an actual fact going on with the appointment of the parole board officials, and what the criteria is specifically with regards to looking at the prisoners that are eligible for parole and the system surrounding that of what's gone into the research to see whether they've been rehabilitated or not, or whether it's basically just an opportunity to try and get out earlier than they actually anticipate. So ultimately, without saying the entire system, they have to look at the protocols and who are the officials in charge of that, and your experts in charge, and the people who are basically forming the part of the committees for the parole board.
Well, the issue here is, in as much as we really have the right intentions, because as you know, Correctional Services' name was there and put there because we had to change that when there was a new dispensation, because we wanted to correct the criminals and to rehabilitate them, so to speak. I don't know whether you believe that is between managing whether people who are leaving prisons have been successfully rehabilitated, and the overcrowding that we are seeing in the prisons.
You see, you've got a few different issues. Number one is we do not have sufficient prisons, and there is a massive amount of overcrowding. Secondly is restorative justice. Does it actually work? That's a long-term debate. Realistically, we saw a lot of these questions come under scrutiny when Oscar Pistorius was paroled. The problem actually is that once the person, and this will always be the issue, you can go ahead and wing it until you're outside. The problem is with most prisoners who are released on parole, they find themselves being reincarcerated within very short periods of time, because there's no real programs outside of the prisons to actually assist parolees with employment, with income generating activities, with skills, and allowing them to go ahead and be employed. So once again, they just go, even if they've rehabilitated themselves to a degree, the opportunities, high unemployment and all of those, just kind of get hit them again, and then it's back to the old routine. The fact is, there's not enough. But secondly, a lot of those crimes, especially the violent crimes, are not going to be, the person's not going to just be rehabilitated that easily. And those are where the factor comes. It's not just your non-violent offenders. Your violent offenders are going to be more and more likely offended within a very short period of time. And that the statistics show.
So, do you believe we need more prisons?
That's another question that one actually goes ahead and thinks. We need a lot of new things. We need more hospitals, more schools, and unfortunately, we do need more prisons. But the problem is, because you've also got a very high unemployment and very low education rate, that also leads to the problem of having a high criminal conduct and activity. So realistically, it's an overall vicious circle. Unless you get that balance right, but unfortunately at this juncture, we do have a shortage of prisoners, and
you mean prisons, not prisoners.
Oh, no, prism. No, we have an abundance of both. We can export them.
Where would this minister have to start? Because it does seem like there's quite a number of things that need to be looked at and quite deeply thought about. Because, I mean, personally, I don't think we need more prisons. That's just me, because I think we need to do the harder work. But, you know, I may be ill-advised here. But obviously there needs to be more engagement.
The problem is that one also has to look at is there's been a lot of additional law changes towards the Criminal Procedure Act and awaiting, and you've got to distinguish between, there's two types of prisoners, and this is what people don't actually realize. You've got awaiting trial prisoners and convicted prisoners. Mm. And that's where there's even a finer balance, because in reality, you've got a lot of people who are imprisoned without bail for different reasons. Some because of the nature of the crime, but others as well, because they simply cannot go ahead and post bail. Yeah. So it becomes almost like a rotating or revolving door of guards coming in, and women, and I'm saying that generally, men and women, going into the prison system, coming out, going back in, coming out, going back in again for the similar offences. If you take a look at things such as non-violent crimes like theft, a person who's convicted once, they usually, especially of things like shoplifting and petty theft, we're not talking about just aggravated robbery. Yeah. We're talking about shoplifting, going into your stores, taking groceries, those type of con artistry. Is you'll find that a person like that may very well have 5-10 opportunities before they're actually incarcerated, but during that time they may also be an awaiting trial prisoner, because they've got different aliases, they've got different names, and that's where the problem actually comes, because you've got two aspects, and that's what people don't realize. There are a number of people that are awaiting trial, and that is what, and with our limited resources, even from the Department of Justice, it means that your court processes are slowed down, which means you can't go ahead and get to all those people in a timely fashion.
So where does he...
It really is.
Where does he begin? Because obviously he's mentioned that this would be done, you know, within the year, hopefully. Right now, with what we are seeing, where would he have to begin for you?
Oh, the first thing he's got to go ahead and do is really reassess at the moment our current population in our prisons, and to the extent of it, and look at perhaps finding an alternative, say, awaiting trial prison system, and maybe more, if one could call them, detention centres, if one could take a look, which are relatively cheaper to go ahead and set up than a whole prison centre. It will also go ahead and at least take perhaps, let's call them, the non-violent offenders out of the general population of awaiting trial. Secondly,
if you can help us here, the difference between a detention center and a prison?
Is basically what you're doing is you're separating your violent offenders from your non-violent offenders. Secondly, is that though you actually look at it from the aspect of those non-violent offenders who are not getting bail per se, but are not as big a danger to the community as say your major gang leaders, that type of thing. So you, if one could almost put it to white collar criminals, the guards who are on fraud, non-violent theft, where they can't post bail, but there are certain issues and extenuating circumstances, or separating out your non-violent offenders instead of what happened where they just get an overall pardon, as what took place, if one looks at it at the time of the Zuma pardon. That they look at basically reassessing that. It will help them to create jobs as well by bringing in more people to actually become correctional services officers without the risk. But also, I've got to take a look at dealing with it, is there might have to be additional, not necessarily that it's optimal. We have seen failures with it beforehand, but a certain degree of privatization, and that has worked other places. We have privatized detention centers as opposed to privatized jails, as what happened if you look at the Tabo Bester Kruger debacle. But then you have that with, say, your more non-violent offenders, but that they are there for serious like money laundering, commercial crimes, criminal activity, that type of nature of offence. So yes, they are in prison, but those are not the guys who are you going to have to worry from a stabbing, from a murder, from a violent internal crime perspective. So it does go ahead. At the same time, then it also means that your guards who are going to be appointed to that mm-hmm. are not going to, in actual fact, have to be severely armed and at that risk. So that is the ways on how you can also bring people in to the correctional services profession. So, and start training them.
So in a way, what you're saying, audit what you're already sitting with right now. Sort that out in a way.
Exactly.
And then see what then you're left with and what you actually need to do immediately.
Precisely. It's basically start with what you get, with what you got. We know that there's limited budgets available. Mm. So rather look at what you got and strategize from there. You've got a system, you got to, albeit as dilapidated as it is, and then take it. Rather go ahead and build from what you got than try and go and start from square one. You'll never accomplish that with it, but especially not by the year end, and especially not with the political interference that comes from the various sources.
Appreciate your time, Ian Ellis, who is a criminal law expert, just giving us a sense of what he thinks has to be done. This is on the back of the new Correctional Services Minister promising earlier on today that, you know, they think there really needs to be a review on the parole system, and he believes that this would be done by the end of the year. And of course, he went into details. He said, at the end of the day, he cannot come up with everything by himself. He needs you and I to bring in comments to try and assist the community, to also try and assist in trying to get all of this right. Your take on that, 086-000-00959.
I agree with the caller that you just had now about, you know, police stations not having vehicles whenever there's an emergency. But it's very strange that on your way to the police station, you see the car, there's one maybe driver, or when you go to the mall, you see, you know, a police officer in that car. It's not like there's an emergency. They're driving by themselves to a mall. But when you go and report a case, there is no car. We want to know exactly what is happening. Is it a shortage of a budget, or what exactly?
Thank you for the topic and the Minister of Police Day. My question basically is, why do we have lack of cars and vehicles in our community? And yes, I hear people say, and I've heard it from time past, that no, there are not enough vehicles. But it's a system issue, because also the few cars that we have, they are sleeping emajaratens abantu. People's homes in complexes, we find those same vehicles. Someone goes home and knocks off from his house, from work. He goes home with that government state vehicle, and it sleeps by his house. And then we say we don't have enough cars, because SAPS cars are sleeping in complexes. Metro Police cars are sleeping in complexes or people's personal homes. Why is that the case?
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.